So anyway, with those types of things, we had kind of a relationship with a lot of the gunners. Now, the smaller caliber ones, they'd all shoot at you. All the villages, they're all AK-47s. And it was not unusual to come back with an AK round in your airplane. That was really common. Now, another story about the frustration of the warrior in Vietnam. It seems like sometimes that our government or our leaders did not want to win the damn war. Case in point. And it's a rescue of Scotch 03. Scotch 03 was an F-105 pilot. Number three, he was a lieutenant colonel. Lieutenant colonel, I always wanted to forget his name on purpose for what happened. But anyway, they called and I could hear the 105 flying. Hey, has anybody seen number three? I don't know what happened. Where is he? And so we went over there real quick and I could see the classic crash site with the fire burning coming out through the jungle. But I'd look around and by the fluke of a chance, I saw his red and white parachute in the top of the jungle. As I came around and I looked at that and I says, wow. And it was only visible for about 3 seconds and then it was gone. Fortunately, I memorized that point before I took my eyes off. And then we come up and started circling him. So we tried to call him, and no answer. Call him, no answer. And then so I thought, well, about the radio. So I pulled up and I ran a simulated dive bomb pass at that place. And that's the only time that I could talk to him, ask a question, and he could respond, and we'd pull off. So that was our communications with Scotch 03 that morning, where it was evening, it was about dark. And he says, I'm down, I have a broken back, and I can't move, and I really like to get out of here. So it wasn't enough chance to get the A4s or the Jollies up there at that time. So the last thing I said to him as the sun was going down, he says, you hide out. Get a good night's sleep, ha ha ha, and we're back to get you in the morning. So I had flown the afternoon Missy mission, which 6 hours. So I'd flown 7.5 hours that day before we put him to bed, went back and landed in Da Nang, and tried to organize the rescue, which turned out to be pretty sad. Anyway, I was up 3 hours of sleep, back in my F-100, and it just at dawn, I came across that spot in an afterburner to wake him up. Now, I couldn't imagine he would be asleep. I said, you still there? Yep, my back hurts really bad. Come and get me. I said, okay, we're on our way. So the next morning, the disjointed, uncoordinated rescue attempt was a thing of beauty. I mean, horribly frustrated. Like, we're trying to save one of a fellow fighter pilots. So they call off the whole rescue because a B-52 from 40,000 feet was going to drop bombs in the DMZ area. So we have to wait till that gets over. You don't know priority, I guess. And that whole morning, there were two helicopters that came in. What they had done at night, they searched around on the ground, the bad guys, and they found it. And they set up a flak trap all around it. So the helicopter would come. As soon as it would come into a hover, they shot them. Heavy ground fire, they shot the heck out of both Jolly Green Giants twice. There was an A1 Sky Raider, and he was a H model. And I don't know why I didn't use the Yankee system, but he was all shot up, and he decided that he would not. The Yankee system was a rocket that would pull you out of the seat in a parachute. For some reason, he didn't want to use that, and he tried to dead stick into the Ben High River. And it was unsuccessful, and he was killed. So there's two helicopters that were shot to pieces. And they were orbiting, trying to organize assets coming in, and it was just incredibly frustrating. So I'd been at this thing for 7 hours and all morning, another 6 hours that morning. And I was tired. And so anyway, I was going to be relieved by the afternoon Missy, a guy named Wells Jackson, really a great guy. So Wells Jackson come up, and I briefed him on the situation. And just about the time I was leaving, all of a sudden there's word come from Crown Headquarters, or Search and Rescue Headquarters, and it says, okay, pull out the forces. Now, we had a couple of flights of F-4s and F-105s all in orbit over there, and we're all ready to go and get this guy, a fellow fighter pilot. And they call up and they says, hey, cancel it. Pull out the forces. We're going to quit. Now, I'll tell you, the only reason us Missies or reason that any of you guys went up there is that we had an agreement with our government that if we were not captured and we had that little radio, that we could talk, you would never abandon us. You would always come up and get us. I mean, you would dig a trench and sail the Queen Mary up there to come and rescue us. That's our agreement that we had with our government. And you can imagine the feeling that you've been rejected by your government, and they violated a prime directive that we had, that we flew up there. They were going to pull out and leave somebody with a broken back that was still talking to us. Now, the feeling that this young captain had, the audacity of this young captain, keyed the mic button, he says, "Who made that decision?" And they says, "Well, sir, it's down in Saigon, Crown Headquarters made the decision to pull out." I says, "No. I want to know the guy's name that made that decision." He said, "Well, it's a general officer." I said, "Okay." I says, "Okay." And I realized something. There was only one guy that was going to talk to him. And if they were going to pull all his forces out and let him die, guess who was going to have to deliver the message to go get him? And I thought, "You son of a gun. If you decided to cancel this rescue forces and leave one of our fellow warriors to die needlessly in the jungle, then you could come up with the exact words you want to tell me." So I asked him, "I want to know the exact words that I'm supposed to tell him that you're going to leave him to die." Ooh. Then there was a lot of silence about that. So anyway, I was briefing Wells Jackson, and with a heavy heart that morning, I pulled up, departed Vietnamese airspace, and flew back to Phuket and landed. And I was sitting at the bar with a few bottles of libation around me. And I was contemplating whether I even ought to go up there anymore. My government didn't think enough to violate their prime directive that maybe I shouldn't do this for them. And I'm really feeling bad. About the time the sun was going down, Wells Jackson, he walked in the door and he had a big smile on his face. And he walked up, he saw me, and I says, "Wells, what the hell are you smiling about after what happened today?" And he says, "Dick, we got Scotch out." I says, "You got him out? Really? What the hell happened?" He says, "Well, the general couldn't come up with the exact words." So we went back and got him. Now, that rescue was a Medal of Honor Award rescue. Now, the flat track governors, you know, when they come into a hover, they shot, and the guy gets away. So they're really smart now. So they wait until the helicopter comes into a hover, puts the cord down, you know, the penetrator, the cable that they're going to pull him up. And then they know they're trapped. He can't get away.
I'll go on that side.
And then they start shooting.
I need to get Ed's attention first.
So we still had the or Wells had the fighters circling. We're all ready to go. The A-1s are circling. And the Jolly Green comes in there. Now, this Jolly Green is an HH-3 helicopter. And he is flown by a Coastie, an exchange officer. He was a captain. His name is Don Engen. And he was the cop, and the PJ that was going to go down the ground had been in country right out of school 4 days. 4 days. And he was a one-striper, two-striper, right out of PJ school. And he was going to go down and get him because he had a broken back. And so what happened, the helicopter came in, hovered. They put him on the cable. They sent Sergeant Tanner. Airman Tanny at that time put him on the ground and pulled the cable back up and went away. And Sergeant Tanny, or Airman Tanny, went around and found Scott 03. They found him. Okay, now once they found him, then he calls the helicopter on his little radio and he vectors him over the top. And he's hovering, nice hover. And then the cable goes down. And the cable is really slow. You put your finger on the button and it just unwinds. If you're getting shot at, it's really slow. But nothing's happening. Everything is calm, see? The cable's going down. Cable's going down. It went down, and Tanny got a hold of the guy, and maybe he's a little rough on him, he thought. In fact, he wrote him up for rough handling. Son of a bitch. You should have left him. Put him down. They put him on this penetrator. It's got two little seats on it. Put the strap on. Hold on to it. And then, in his radio... And the recording is something else. I mean, this is unbelievable, the recording. And he calls on, everything's quiet now, calls on the radio and says, okay, I got him, pull me up. And so he starts up off the jungle floor. He's got to go through maybe a couple hundred feet of jungle foliage. He's coming up really slow. And once he gets about 30, 40 feet off the ground, they open up. The whole world opens up. And Tanny grabs the radio and he's screaming. He says, ground fire, take it out, ground fire, cut me loose, take it out. And I talked to him later. I says, how in the world did you ask that helicopter that's saving your life to cut you loose? I mean, how brave is that be? It's incredible. And he looked at me years later and he says, oh, no, sir. No, sir. He says, I didn't want the damn thing falling on me. Because what he saw up there, that helicopter was being shot to pieces. It was plexiglass coming out. There was holes in it. One of the landing gear had fallen out of the airplane. It's punctured a whole bunch of fuel lines. Crap was falling out. And it was just hovering there. And I asked Don Egan later. I says, wow, that was really something. And you know what his comment was? He says, sir, there was no fine way that I was going to ever abandon my PJ on the ground. And right now we're working on trying to upgrade his Air Force Cross when I found out that the Coast Guard had not had a Medal of Honor during the war. And I thought if anybody deserved that, especially the Coast Guard for all the work that they did, that this is an opportunity to upgrade that thing to a Medal of Honor. And they pulled him up, they got him in the helicopter, they dragged him across the DMZ to the head of medevac station at the rock pile, and they got him out. He couldn't say the magic word. Wow. How do you get people like that?